Welcome to Alumni Live, the podcast. These are conversations with Grand Valley State University film and video graduates about the industry, the film video major, and alumni profiles.
Welcome, everybody, to the podcast series covering the history of Grand Valley Television. With me is a cohort of many of my good old friends who joined me from around 2016 to roughly 2021. Could I have Jillian Noonan please introduce yourself real quick?
I'm Jillian Noonan. I was a producer of Late Night Brew. I'm a late night talk show while I was in school. And then I was actually Kyle's vice president my junior year. And then I was president of the station my senior year.
It only seems right to follow that up with Mary, considering that you follow Jillian as president.
I was in charge of Laker news for most of the time because of my journalism background. I was the news director, vice president, and then president for pretty short times just because of when I graduated.
I think it's only fair that we just follow up with your husband.
Noah Jensen. I started working on the sports show After the Whistle, producer for After the Whistle for a year, year and a half, and I was sports director for my last semester for GVTV.
Excellent. Savannah, let's just go ahead and throw it to you.
I'm Savannah, and I did a lot of work with Late Night Brew, and I ended up being a producer and co-head writer of Late Night Brew for a little while, right before the pandemic, and I did just a bunch of other random stuff, kind of all my years at GVTV.
Thanks for giving us the foreshadowing, Savannah, that our era ends with a bit of a bummer. We're going to get to that later. Harley, do you want to follow that one up?
Hi, I'm Harley Collar. I worked on Late Night Brew, a bunch of other things on GVTV. I also co-produced Black Box and was the studio manager at one point.
I remember you were in 2020 and 2021 studio manager. I think you followed up Noah here, who I'm going to ask to introduce himself.
Hi, I'm Noah Houchley. I was the studio manager at my time at GVTV, and I worked on Late Night Brew mostly, but pretty much anything that required someone to hold a boom pole.
Thanks for that, Noah. You were the certified boom operator for our time there. My name is Kyle Matchmay. I started off working on a show called Catastrophe, foreshadowing that the show was a catastrophe to make and produce. This was followed by my time as writer, and then I was president for a year with Jillian as my vice president. Thanks everyone for being here. This is great that we get the chance to catalog the history of GVTV. It was a very formative time period for me. It's time that I took very seriously and I got a lot out of, so I'm glad that we all get to chat about it. Everyone just gave their introductions of what they did on the show. I think it'd also be really great if everyone could just really briefly, one sentence summary, what they're doing right now. I work at GVSU full-time, creating educational video in their e-learning department.
I am a project manager at a production company here in Grand Rapids called Ideology Productions.
I am a journalist and a photographer in the Ann Arbor area.
I am a middle school teacher in the Ann Arbor area.
I am an administrative assistant, and I do freelance production design.
I work at GDAR TV, and I do shorts on the side.
I work at GVSU and make them e-learning materials and other content for teachers.
Thanks, everyone, for that brief about where you're at right now. I think that we're going to be able to tell a lot of stories about how they tie in together with our times at GVTV, which I think is going to be very valuable. If it's okay, I'm going to set the scene for GVTV in 2016, which is that when I enter it as a baby freshman, it was probably my third day on campus. I go to a meeting that was a little intimidating, as I'm sure a lot of people will probably recite to as well. It was very packed. It was very active. And it seemed like a full-fledged kind of production was going on. GVTV presented itself as the hub for all of the filmmakers. If you were a film major, you should be in GVTV was the kind of vibe that I got, which I didn't think at first because I didn't imagine the filmmakers would be drawn there. But ultimately, it's the place that had the equipment. It's the place that had the studio. And it's the place where all of these creative people gravitated towards. At the time, the journalism side of it, the news program and the sports programming, they were there, but I would say they were almost kind of on life support. The last few major leaders were still holding the torch, but they were about to graduate and leave this kind of vacuum. 2016 is this era where the filmmakers start taking over and they kind of hold onto that for quite a few more years until we're able to fill that leadership gap again and start bringing in new talent for specifically Laker News and After the Whistle. I know that I showed up to the first meeting And then I didn't show up again for another semester. I was just intimidated. I didn't really know what I wanted to do. I just kind of got scared. And for a whole fall semester, I didn't do anything until finally I was still on their mailing list. And a producer had reached out via email and he said, "Hey, I'm producing a show called Catastrophe and I'm looking for help." And I said, "Well, I can help." And I was one of only two people who showed up to that meeting, which means that I got to direct the second episode. And that's kind of how things go sometimes. Showing up really is half the battle. And as I said before, Catastrophe was kind of a catastrophe. We'll talk about more of that later, but it's this reoccurring theme of doing too much and making things too big. We were going to do 10 episodes a year. Each episode was going to be 40 minutes. Each episode was going to feature 10 different cast members in this office mockumentary style kind of show. We made it through like 4 episodes and it kind of killed everyone and we all hated each other by the end. So I was looking for an escape. I accepted an e-board position as PR, even though I had zero experience in marketing or anything like that. Literally because, again, I was the only one who applied. So that just kind of shows you what you get for showing up. And then I realized that Catastrophe was a sinking ship, so I ditched it and I tried to join this other show called Late Night Brew with this late night's comedy sketch. I come on as a writer and then a crew hand and then eventually kind of doing a lot more in every aspect of it. The next year follows, and I'll say that this is the part where a lot of you start coming into the picture, I feel like. Everyone who is a part of Late Night Brew, which is basically everyone here except for Noah Jensen. I'm going to popcorn around, talk about how you got started with Late Night Brew, and then what it meant for you at the time. And I'm going to start with Harley, if that's all right.
Yeah, I remember the first meeting I ever went to for GVTV. I was super, super excited. I was like, yes, this is my first time getting hands on like equipment that I can use and basically create a freedom to do whatever I want. I think I came into that with an idea for a show. And I remember hearing about Late Night Brew and how you guys wanted segments. After pitching my segment, I remember just also being part of other things with Late Night Brew. Being there during the shoot, I think I was also one of the writers for the new segment on Late Night Brew, and I just got sucked in.
Fantastic. Mary, do you want to follow that one up?
I joined Late Night Brew right away because there wasn't a huge space with news. That was what I was into at the time. But being a freshman, I wasn't really going to just take that on first meeting. I needed a space and everyone was going to Late Night Brew. And there was a lot of freshmen that year. I don't know if that's abnormal for other years, but I just remember there being a lot and everyone was really friendly. I remember Savannah specifically was really welcoming and she was kind of like, "Hey, let's go to this meeting." And so I just followed the crowd there and it ended up being really fun. So I stayed. Comedy wasn't like the main reason I did GVTV. It was for the news, but it was really cool to be in that space. And I still did it as the years went on just because I thought it was fun and the people were fun. But I can't really remember specifically how much I contributed as far as like skits and stuff. I think I was just along for the ride and helping set up stuff.
And that's similar, I think, to what I was doing with that show I was talking about, Catastrophe, where I just kind of showed up and I said, "I'm just here to help." And then if you just do that long enough and you just are a reoccurring, reliable figure, people start giving you responsibility pretty quickly. Savannah, you want to follow?
Sure thing. I went to my very first GVTV meeting and I remember that we had split off into different shows and they had said something about Late Night Brew. It was like, that's the jackpot for me. And that's exactly what I want to do, is like comedy television. Like, that's everything I want. And after that, I kept going to meetings and not really doing anything quite yet. But there was someone else that I had met, Carter Penny, who had kind of roped me into being in this friend group that had kind of taken over Late Night Brew a little bit. And that's also why I was so welcoming to Mary. I grabbed her and a few other people and the freshmen attacked Late Night Brew and it was a really good time.
Noah, could you follow that one up?
Absolutely. I kind of just got a good pitch in one of the film classes about GVTV, came in one day and just found a group. They were working on a horror project called Alone and instantly just, "All right, no, you can come in and you can hold boom on this one." And I just got sucked in the same way everyone did to Late Night Brew. And then after Alone was done, I went off into Late Night Brew, became studio manager there and boom op extraordinaire.
Jillian, do you want to follow that up with the transition from Alone to Late Night Brew? And maybe explain what Alone was.
Yeah, Alone was a fiction show that was kind of like a thriller, mystery, touch of horror. There was some special effects. I worked on that my freshman year with Noah Houchley. And then I was also doing a segment on Late Night Brew called Hoss Hunters, which is so cringy to look back on, but I'm proud of myself for making something with my friends and putting myself out there. But the premise was me running around campus in camo, trying to find President Haas. And then I moved into a producer position my sophomore year with Kyle as head writer. And I got to live direct Late Night Brew because we had an in-studio portion that was in the GBTV studio. And we had two hosts that we'd switch between a main cam, side cams, things like that. And then that would be intermixed with segments, which people have been mentioning that they had their own segments. And what was great about Late Night Brew is that could be reoccurring segments or they could be one-off segments. And it allowed people to get to actually make things. That's the cool thing about GBTV is that you get to actually make what you want to make with gear available to you. So that's one of the reasons I love Late Night Brew is because it was such a great mixture of live broadcast on top of fiction segments. So yeah, that's what I did.
Jillian, thank you for giving me this ramp to talk about what the environment was around 2016, 2017. I entered into GBTV in a period where there was kind of this scarcity mindset, I think for good reason, because everyone who showed up to GBTV wanted to have their own show. And there was just this recognition, well, not everyone gets to have their own show. So if you want to have a show, you got to kind of be here for a while. You got to pay your dues. And then you got to pitch at the end of the semester and say, hey, I want to do a show. And here's what the pitch is going to be. And then the whole of GBTV votes on whether or not they think that you should get a show. By the time that I become president, we get rid of that system because, hey, if you've got an idea, if it's good, we'll do it. And you don't have to go through this whole rigmarole. But at the time, Late Night Brew was the easiest on-ramp because Late Night Brew is the sketch comedy thing where they're compiling usually 3, 4, 5 segments into each episode. So you can just make a segment. And even if it's bad, like who cares? It's only 1 of 5 as opposed to being a part of the whole. So this was really useful to be able to get your start somewhere. And I think that that's just a good mindset in general to have. The biggest thing is that you just need to go through the repetitious cycle of creating things and then reflecting on the thing you created and then start creating again. And I think it's a problem for like when I talked about the show Catastrophe, because we were trying to just do so much and we didn't have time to just breathe and reflect and have a moment to be like, oh, this is working and this isn't working. Because we were trying to make these 40-minute episodes, one after the other, after the other, after the other. And then we just experienced intense burnout. So Late Night Brew is great for that, where you get to have these shorter things that are all kind of working together. Does anyone have a real favorite thing that they ever made with Late Night Brew?
Can I say my favorite one that you made?
Of course.
The French New Wave with Griffin one.
That's also kind of the favorite thing that I ever made there. That was perfect.
My favorite thing was definitely the one shot that we did towards the end of the show. We made a big finale episode and there was, gosh, 5 to 10 minute long one take that we moved all throughout the building of Kirkoff. And we just had all of our crew members populating the shot. And it was just really special because it was a fun way to end it and kind of see everyone who actually participated in it on camera. And it was a big feat. We moved all throughout Kirkoff and we did rehearsals and then we shot it. Like, that's impressive.
I would have to agree with Joanne. That one shot was so much fun, as stressful as it was, especially with all the little references to everything that's been on Late Night Brew. It was just such a special thing to make.
The one shot that we did made me think of the 48-hour challenge. All of us working together and all of us doing it constantly for a very short period of time and throughout the whole school, basically. Yeah, that was a really good time.
I love film challenges like that because it gives you just the opportunity to go all out in one period. So many times people would say like, oh, I want to make something. And then they talk about making it for so long and then it just never comes to fruition. And that's just a normal part of filmmaking. It's just difficult to make anything. But what's great about a challenge like that is it just says, hey, you and other people, you're going to be committed. You're not going to do anything else. No distractions. You have to have a final deliverable. And I remember we did it 2 years. The third year we tried to start our own challenge for other people to do. And then a pandemic happened. But the first two were really valuable for me. I got to direct both of them. The first one was a script we wrote, which was inspired by Bo Burnham, who did a left hemisphere, right hemisphere sketch once. And we decided to write a script about a character who's deciding if he wants to come out of the closet to his parents. And the left brain, right brain are kind of having this argument about whether they should do it. The short is relatively good for what it is, but also it was like 2 years later that I just realized there were like 22 people involved in making this. I don't think a single one of them at the time was like openly queer. And I think there was just a lot of straight people in the room who were like, let's tell this story. I don't think we did a bad job, but I think that there's a part of it, there's like a naivete and an ignorance that we brought to it, like an overconfidence to tell a story that we truly didn't understand. And the second year, I remember someone had the idea that it was going to be all D&D fantasy, and we made it a little too big, and it kind of got away from us. But I remember being 1 a.m. with the two people who said they would write it, and I remember asking them both about like interjecting more D&D references into the script, and both of them revealed to me that neither of them had ever played D&D, and that was a lot. That was stressful. Anyways, those film challenges were really valuable. They give you a chance to experiment and try big things. And I think that's the best thing that GBTV can offer you, is just a chance to just get out there and make something. Make it bad. It doesn't matter if it's good or bad. What matters is that you're getting better each time. We entered into GBTV in this late 2010s experience where there was technically still a cable channel that was running throughout the campus that was technically running 24/7, 365 to all of the TVs. We were technically programming it, but no one was watching it, because why would you? You need to have a TV in a dorm connected to the cable, and you'd have to actively choose to start watching GBTV.
I watched Late Night Brew on my freshman year cable TV in my dorm, and I thought it was a very cool experience to see my name go across the screen on my TV. So it was still kind of cool.
I remember seeing it at like Kleiner and stuff. We would be sitting there for late night and we would see something we made be up on the TV. I thought that was cool.
No, and you should. It's just an interesting contrast against what I heard from the past, because I would be talking to older alumni who would say, like, we knew that people were watching it because, like, we'd be in class and people would reference it or something. Whereas for us, it felt like we were in our bubble and we were making content for this cable channel, but also online on YouTube and things like that. And feeling like we'd have to really advocate for our friends or family to start watching it. There was just so much competition with content, as opposed to maybe 10 years prior where there was like, oh, you might have some DVDs or you might have some early version of Netflix or something like that. There wasn't a whole lot that you could watch as a student on campus. And so GBTV kind of had this greater stronghold on the campus. Does anyone have any thoughts or opinions about that transition to online distribution or any other examples of like when it was going on cable?
When I first started at GBSU, I remember I had really liked the school. I knew they had a film program. I was very excited. I had no idea about GBTV, to be honest. And I remember doing the first couple days or whatever, and I would talk to older students and they would be like, oh yeah, I think there's something for you. I think there's some kind of club for you, maybe. And when I found it, and it was such a big community, I was so shocked because it wasn't as visible as it maybe was a couple of years ago. But I think that it also gave us a little bit of freedom to kind of get silly and goofy with it, to make stuff that was a little bit weirder maybe, and just do what we really wanted to do because we were just like on YouTube, you know?
I think with After the Whistle, there was a huge shift. I just remember coming in 2017. I transferred in from a community college. I was an upperclassman, but I was still really fresh and new to the whole program and everything like that. And when I first got there, it was 85-90% scripted. It was recaps of Grand Valley State games we would have scripted. And then every once in a while, we would put into the script some national news. After that 2017 year, D'Angelo Starks and myself were named producers of the show, and we kept that scripted format, but with everything really going online, we thought sectioning things off and creating new segments for the show, instead of having one 10-minute segment that was scripted, we would have 4 or 5 segments, about 10 minutes long each, where each segment we would recap some Major League Baseball or some NFL or NBA, college, football or basketball, whatever was going on. And it really gave us the chance to do what we really love to do as the sports kids around there. Before me, it was Maitland Moselle and Natalie Longroy. They were there and really had a good set of bones and a good structure for the show. I think when we were able to get our hands on it and create what we really felt comfortable and wanted to create, personally, I really think the show started rolling a lot. I think we saw a lot more people want to be a part of After the Whistle. First getting on, there was really only a couple of spots a week that could be filming anything. And now adding these extra shows, we're able to get 6-7 different faces on every week to showcase their talents. And so I really think transitioning there because of everything going on to YouTube was a big change, at least from my end.
Noah, you've got me thinking then about these transitions. Mary, you're the one who introduced TikTok to me. You were explaining to me how it functioned, and I didn't fully understand, as most people don't when they first hear about it. And then very quickly, it started becoming popular. I don't remember during my period, we were ever making any vertical short form video by the time that I left in 2020. But did anyone here ever work on any short form vertical content for GBTV?
I remember hearing one thing about pitches for a reviewing the bathrooms on GVTV show. And that one was going to be short form content reviews, I believe. But I don't know if that idea ever got off the ground.
Yeah, he made it. He made a couple episodes.
I do remember the bathroom ones for sure. And yeah, I definitely don't remember doing any type of TikTok because it was still like relatively new and like it was something like kids were doing. But I remember taking a video of the Noahs and Jillian doing the Heathers dance. That was like the first TikTok I ever took.
Yes, because I watched you make it and that was me being like, what is happening here? And that was very much like what was going to be the thing for many years to come.
Oh, that was awesome.
We're taking a short break to tell you about the Dirk Koenig Memorial Film and Video Scholarship. Here's Gretchen Vinich remembering Dirk Koenig.
The Koenig Scholarship enables students to get that kind of an education, to be a good filmmaker, to be able to express their voice, and to continue Dirk's dream.
For more information and to donate to the scholarship, visit the link in the description. Now back to the show.
One thing that I was very proud of was this idea that I realized YouTube had targeted advertising. And ultimately, I had this goal that I wanted every piece of content that we put online to be watched by at least 100 viewers. We were averaging 20, 25, maybe 50 if you were lucky. We were producing a cooking show called You Cook. We had After the Whistle, which was a sports show. We had Late Night Brew, which is the sketch comedy. We had Alone, the horror anthology series, as well as a different one called Crack Clouds that was kind of a successor to that. Am I missing anything? I feel like I'm missing a couple. Black Box, which was bringing in local musicians and basically like studio live recordings of them, which was, I think, genius and was one of the great things that we were able to do. Noah?
Can't forget Interviews.
Which was technically a part of Late Night Brew and then spun off into its own thing. But all of this content we were producing, I wanted to make sure that there were eyeballs on it and specifically targeted to the GVSU community. So I realized you could just spend like $10 and your video will get spam added basically per anyone within a square mile of the GVSU campus in Allendale. And so if you watch an ad long enough, it actually turns into a view. I was kind of buying views, but in a somewhat legitimate way. And we were starting to have people go around and be like, I'm getting these ads for these things. And I'm seeing my classmates' faces and whatnot that are being popped up. And I was just proud of that fact. And I don't know if that would still be a viable tactic now, but certainly being smart about the geography of your space and figuring out how you can kind of hack it. When I started with GVTV, it was very much closed off for the studio space, which was that if you were an eBoard member, you got a key and you'd really use it if you were recording and then nothing else. By the time that I come in charge, there was this transition period where everyone started wanting to hang out there all the time. I don't know what the GVTV studio is looking like in this day and age in 2025, but I certainly hope that it's similar to the experience that we all had, which is that it was basically my home base between classes and everyone would tag team in and out of like fostering ownership of the studio. And if anyone was walking by and wanted to poke their head in, that they'd be like, yeah, come on in. This is a cool space to hang out. Does anyone want to talk about that experience as a college student?
I remember painting the back wall at one point over a summer. That might still be up.
And we didn't get approval to do it.
But the wall looks good. That whole space just sort of grew from the years that we were all starting when it was locked most of the time and nobody was in there. Then just as time went on, everybody just contributed something. Kyle, I think you brought a bunch of DVDs and a spare TV you had. Everyone would just bring in stuff. And then there's a rotating group of people down there and you're just kind of keeping one long conversation going for the whole day. It was really, really awesome. I hope it's still being used that way.
Yeah, I definitely will second everything that Noah said with it being that second space. I never felt like, where am I going to go? Should I go home? Like, no, I was just going to go to the studio. And like, we had houses. We could have hung out, but like, we all hung out there because we knew that everyone would just pop in. It was a fun space. Kyle had his setup with the TV, so it was super fun. It just became this space where everyone was going to be talking to everyone. It didn't matter if you were on the same show with them. It didn't matter if you're on eBoard. Everyone was just friends in the studio.
Yeah, for my first 2 years of college, I was basically in the GVTV studio more than my own house. And that's how I made all of my friends that I still have to this day, basically, is like from the people that I was spending time with at the GVTV studio. And it was so fun and awesome. That's how I was introduced to so many movies and TV shows, because everyone was just watching something at the time and just showing everybody other things. It's just such a beneficial space to spend all of my time at. But unfortunately, I do think that the pandemic killed the space a little bit. I don't think it's being utilized like that as much anymore. I would love for that to come back. It was the best thing, I think, for my experience at GVSU.
Yeah, I was only a part of the e-board for a semester, and my favorite part of my last semester was hanging out in there. And I think I'm a little biased because I got a pretty good relationship out of it, I would say. But I kind of felt like the outcast because I was like the sports guy. I thought I wasn't going to be able to fit in. And it was so easy to fit in with everybody. I remember having my call with Jillian when you guys told me I was going to be the sports director. And Jillian saying, well, you have to have office hours 2 days a week. And I'm like, 2 days a week? That's going to be awful. And like, I loved it. I was in there way more than my office hours. And I was in there so much more than I ever expected to in that one semester.
I forgot that I asked you all to do office hours if you were on e-board.
Did people come and talk to us during those office hours for actual GVTV things? Definitely not. But it was a great excuse to be in there.
If there's any GVTV e-board members listening right now, make office hours, make that studio a hangouts place, because I think everyone's talked about how beneficial it was. E-board members are often upperclassmen. So like you could just be working on an edit, or you could be working something on the computer and people are around learning together. The film program is pretty small overall. We're small and major. And broadcasting is also not huge. So like you're already kind of creating that dynamic, but being a part of GVTV, you're meeting people to work on stuff together and you're growing your skills and you're learning from them. And I made connections that truly are my best friends. I made connections of people that I still work with today in the industry. And when we hopped on this Zoom call, it was so great. And it felt like we were just transported back there because I miss everyone so much. So I think that would be our biggest advice. Hang out in the studio, make it a space, because you'll love it. You'll definitely love it.
I think that a baseline requirement, if you want to build GVTV, if you're listening to this in 2035, 2045, whatever, and that studio is still down there in the basement of Kirchhoff and is struggling to get started, it really starts with good vibes. It starts with just having this third space where people can just come into. It means getting the people that you know that can build those good vibes, bringing them in, and then being like, please just be in this space and draw people in and build relationships out of that. My college friendship group is just the GVTV group that I still see and hang out with. We kind of skirted over it earlier, but Noah and Mary, I do claim partial credit for, because I said, Mary, you're head of news, Noah, you're head of sports, and hey, we have to make an introduction video, so I need the two of you to go over to this corner, and I need you to like talk for a minute on camera and look like the two of you are discussing business. Turns out the business you were discussing was maybe like your first date or something, I don't know, because now you're married.
It took a little longer than that day for us to get our first date. It was actually 6 years ago yesterday we made that video.
We watch it every
year. We watch it every year on our Meetiversary.
Are you serious?
Yes, yes. We see little Noah with his up north accent, and we see Mary talking with her hands, and now we can show our daughter, and it's awesome. It really is. The fact that I reluctantly went into this position because the former sports director, Jacob Hunting, said, I'm actually not going back to school. I'm going to move to Florida. Jillian's going to give you a call and give you a rundown. And I'm like, all right, cool. I guess I'll do this. I was fully okay with just being a part of After the Whistle. And now I have to go to all these meetings and do all this extra stuff. And you know what? I think it was worth it.
I remember you were like, Mary, you're with the sports director. And I was like, oh, brother, I got to talk to this guy. What am I going to talk to him about? And then I guess talked about like our towns being small. And I was like, hey, he's pretty cool. But it's funny because that exact spot was right outside the studio where we met. We went back there the summer and we showed our daughter around. I mean, she was a year old at the time. Not so even. We took like a selfie.
Jillian, you and I are on some promotional materials outside the GVTV studio.
I was just there 2 weeks ago. Pretty much everyone here is featured in some way right outside the front door.
Yeah, it's so cool that we have a spot, and the fact that we have that to share because Kyle Matchmaker decided to film this video and put us together. It is amazing. I can never thank you enough for like allowing me to be a part of GVTV so I could meet my future wife. The funniest part is the year before, Mary's office hours were the exact same time after the whistle shot. And I don't think we knew either one of us were in there.
I didn't know he existed. I was so mad that that's when my office hours were, because they had to have it really quiet because they were doing the in-studio, out-studio thing. The lights had to be off. Yep. And everyone had to be silent. So none of my friends could come visit me. And I was like, what is this? What's this sports, guys? I guess I should have chatted them up. I don't know.
It's crazy that just that one decision has led to the next 6 years being what they were.
That is the most beautiful thing I've heard all week. Thank you for sharing that. I want to talk about this transition where we had originally Leno Kelly, who is this very well-known and respected radio broadcaster. He was the faculty advisor of GVTV for many, many years. And it's interesting because he oversaw this news period and this broadcasting period where he had to fight a lot of battles with administration sometimes about content. Like, there was a period of time where a lot of the buildings were being named after rich donors. GVTV decided to make some content that was A, kind of highlighting that, and B, like making fun of it. And he had to step up and play defense for GVTV in order to like have journalistic integrity / content integrity. I feel like that's something that gave away later on as we were getting more filmmaker focused. And honestly, we were just starting to put stuff online and no one was really just seeing what we were doing. So we could kind of just get away with more stuff. Then James Ford takes over, and I believe he's still overseeing it now. And he was really passionate and still is about broadcasting. But I think that was just not really a concern that we had, at least in our years, because it just wasn't really something we were interested in doing. I want to talk about this era towards the end where we tried to make a lot of podcast content, which honestly, seeing how much podcasting has really hit it off the past 5 years, we were really on the right trend for that. But do you two, Noah and Jillian, want to talk about What the Food as well as our podcasting experiences in general for a quick minute?
Yeah, I think it's probably, and I don't know if this is hyperbole, like the greatest thing GVTV has ever created. I loved it. I know we only did 2 episodes, and again, wish I could have been around longer so we could have kept doing it. Like, man, who cares about that student debt if we could have got like 3 more episodes of What the Food out before the pandemic hit? And Jillian, I teach middle school, and you know, middle schoolers, they find out your name and they want to find out everything about you. And well, wouldn't you know, I got some kids coming into my class and saying, hey, you do a podcast? And so initially I'm thinking, oh, it's my podcast I did with my friends, the sports podcast we did on Spotify. And I said, oh, the sports podcast? They said, no, not that one. What the Food? You know, the mukbang videos that you would do. I'm like, how did you find that? Because I genuinely don't know how they could have found it. But Jillian, I just want you to know you are famous in Milan Middle School. Like, they would tell me they would fall asleep listening to us eat food.
What?
I downloaded the Creator app to see the year in review. And I had 2 people where their number one podcast was my sports podcast I made. And the last episode was in 2022. In 2019, I wasn't thinking when I was making this, man, there's going to be some 14-year-old later on.
That is amazing. I'm glad. If only we would have made more.
I really think having the video podcast be a part of GBTV, I think it was another avenue to create content. And I think that would have just really helped with the creation of more and more different things at GVTV.
I think what was most valuable about the story of like, you guys just wanted to eat food on camera and you did, is just like give people opportunities to really just try anything, especially if it's low effort, it doesn't take a lot of resources. And if you can promise that you'll get it done, even if it's wild or crazy and you're not entirely sure who the audience is for, try and get people to make things. And I think a mukbang podcast is an example of that. I'm going to segue again into Hugh Boyd. Hugh Boyd is arguably one of the most influential figures to come out of GVTV. I think genuinely his content is the most capable of a crossover appeal to being like massive, large, high quality comedy. He was basically doing a version of Billy on the Street. He was doing street interviews, but with a real surreal edge and a weird factual historical edge. Hugh Boyd was just like this enigma on the college campus. He would just go around and like ask weird questions, and then they would be edited into these really fun pieces that were just wild and crazy. And he would like walk around just drinking green paint in front of people and then catching their reactions. And it could have easily come off as just lame or cringy, but instead it was genuinely really funny stuff. I think that we kept trying to put guardrails in front of Hugh because we're like, well, if you want to make content, you have to do X, Y, and Z, because that's just kind of the old way of how we did things. But we realized after a while, we should just let let him do his thing. Does anyone else want to have any final thoughts about Cute Boy?
You made that poor boy eat paint, but it was entertaining. So that's what we were looking to do.
Wait, it was real?
Yes, Hugh Boyd found non-toxic green paint, and then he just started walking around drinking it and asking other people to drink it with him. And one poor sucker did.
I definitely didn't think it was real.
It was good publicity, though. We had someone making a show on freshman campus, talking about DBTV and doing really weird stuff, that then maybe they come across it later on the YouTube channel, and now they're kind of seeing what DBTV does. So that was cool.
I'm going to segue now into the end of our era, which does continue on a little bit further. But for me, I was very excited for the last few months of my senior year. I was going to graduate and I was preparing all this leadership. And I was like, Jillian, you're going to take over. This is what that kind of like succession plan is going to look like. Here are all the different leadership positions we have. We're feeling really confident. And then a pandemic kind of just smacked us all in the face and then made it very difficult to continue doing recruitment and recording and all of the social living that came along with GBTV.
It was devastating. We just didn't really make anything for the fall semester of 2020. And then the winter semester, you could come on campus more, people wearing masks, there was more filming opportunities. But all GBTV really was like our weekly meetings over Zoom. And it definitely didn't really foster the same type of environment, especially because like when you were president, you made the meetings so fun. So there just definitely wasn't that much opportunity for it to flourish during that period. It makes me sad to think that incoming freshmen at that time didn't have the opportunity to build a community that we did or join the community that we did. But now that it's been a couple of years, I'm hoping that it's come out of that now.
The biggest thing besides just school and everything else that was stopping around the world is that it stopped the studio where we all collected and gathered. We just couldn't. Like Jillian said, something that I hope comes back. If anyone on the e-board is listening, just go and check out the space and see what you can do with it.
I was only president for a semester, so like I didn't feel like I could do much because I was graduating. And well, we were still in COVID, but we were able to meet in person with like masks on. You know, we didn't have to be in Zoom. But even though the meetings were in person and like the masks weren't that big of a deal, I think it was because we couldn't all be in that studio because it was so small. We couldn't have more than like one or two people in the studio. The culture didn't come back that semester. And it just speaks to how important that studio space was.
I was the last of us there. And I made it through the point where we were back on campus and like actively really doing stuff. It definitely was not the same. It was really hard to get people to be able to spend time together and like build that community aspect of it. And I think like we all said earlier, that was such an important part of the whole thing. It was disappointing. And I will also tell a quick story of when I found out that we were leaving because we were setting up a podcast of our own. It was supposed to be a movie podcast where we kind of talk about crappy movies. And we fought pretty hard for it for a long, long time, for months and months. And then we finally got to shoot an episode and we set up, we were at the studio, we had some friends there setting up for it and everything. We get everything all set and then we all got an email that was like, you're going home for 2 weeks and there's a global pandemic and we all just had to leave. We all just had to tear down and I didn't even get to do this podcast I had fought months and months for. So yeah, I think that's the biggest thing I miss. I wish I could have gotten to do that podcast. I wish I could have had the opportunity.
So I think it's valuable to talk about what we gained from GBTV. You know, everyone goes to college for usually a pretty good reason, which is growth. Usually we emphasize that as professional growth, but there's certainly a lot of personal growth that comes along with it. I want everyone to talk about the most valuable thing that they gained out of GBTV that really helped them grow into adulthood. Harley, you want to kick us off?
I think the most valuable thing I gained from GBTV was the experience. It was the first time I was ever on a real film set, doing film things, messing with C-stands, figuring out lighting, using cameras. You taught me how to edit in the GBTV studio. That's where I learned most of the things I know now.
I walked in not really knowing anything about editing, sound, you name it. But just due to exposure, being on sets, talking with people, seeing more films and everything, you really get a lot really quickly out of it. And if you stay with it, you're just going to go further and further. So bring back that studio space if you can. It goes a long way to fostering good bonds between the classmates and see what happens from there.
like everyone mentioned, having access to gear that you don't normally have access to, like you're getting your hands on stuff that you might not start working with until like Fiction 1. And then getting access to upperclassmen and learning from them, it's a great networking experience.
Definitely the experience getting the hands-on time with equipment and learning so much that I was able to, in my actual classes, kind of focus on the more storytelling aspects of it because I knew a lot of the other stuff from working on GVTV and I had all the technical stuff in my brain already. But also, honestly, the relationships that I made, I think, were so important to me and are still so important to me to this day. And I have changed a lot as a person over time, and I think GVTV and the people that I spent that time with helped me really grow into the person I am right now.
I mean, other than the obvious meeting my husband and some of my best friends with GVTV, as far as the learning aspect, I'm a print journalist, so I was never a broadcast person, and I was never a film person. But I will say, just knowing how to like edit and learning those softwares, learning the camera equipment, even setting up tripods and stuff, it really helped me with my day-to-day confidence in technology. I feel like before college, I was always the type to be like, I don't know what I'm doing on computers and stuff. Ever since then, I really don't find myself saying that. I just feel really confident and comfortable in using most technology and most equipment because of GVTV and like all the educational lessons that we learned.
The vast majority of people that we tried to recruit and that were a part of GVTV were either film major or they were broadcasting major. But they're just really valuable to also just find other people to want to also be a part of it and convince them. Media is a valuable thing. So doing whatever you can to broaden those horizons is always valuable. Noah?
Like Mary said, obviously finding my wife was a really great experience. Just having the opportunity to meet new people and meet people you wouldn't normally run into on campus is something that I think you can really take away from it if utilizing the studio is what students want to do more and more after listening to this. But even just the lessons that I've learned about media from the conversations that we would have in the studio, I mean, there are things that I use in my classes today with the journalism stuff that I'm teaching that I learned in the GVTV studio. I never saw myself getting into education, but having those experiences, I think, has really helped me in the classroom for sure.
Thank you, Noah. I'm going to try and wrap up my final thoughts here as quickly as possible. I really want to emphasize the fact that like failure is just an extremely valuable thing. And GVTV was just a great place to fail. We could just kind of do whatever we wanted and it could be bad or good. And it really didn't matter. We were just going through that iterative creative process over and over again and gaining those skills each time. And I think that having that safe environment to do so was really valuable. I do remember not taking advantage of so many opportunities that I wish that I had. I remember at one point, the head of the promotions office, Bobby Nielsen, came to us one time and said, hey, we're looking for people who are willing to kind of like work with us, do this free broadcasting work that we need to do. It's going to be like out of state. It's going to be a drive, but it's going to be really valuable. And I remember thinking like, I'm not going out of state, not getting paid. That's ridiculous. And then like a year later, I was applying to work at promotions office under Bobby and I didn't get the job. And I'm sure it was for a number of reasons, but part of which in the back of my mind, I was like, man, I really should have shown up to that thing he wanted me to do and really could have just like proven myself because I could have gotten to work at one of the best places to work at for a film major as a student, which is the promotions office. And I say that as someone who hires students at my other studio, but the Bobby's work there is so valuable and I didn't get to do that because I didn't take advantage of that opportunity. And I feel bad for any film major who doesn't take advantage of the opportunity of GVTV or broadcasting major or anyone who just is interested in media creation. Because when I was a film major, you know, I'd probably be making on average like 3 videos per semester per the limitations of a course, like that just makes sense. But I needed to be making more. I needed to be doing the practice more and more, and GVTV offered me that practice. And it also offered me to just try weird things that I never would have, like figuring out how Google Analytics works and running ads through that. Or there's a whole period where we were really getting into live streaming. And so I learned how to run this whole live streaming equipment. And because I learned that skill, there was a point in which like a local synagogue was asking for like anyone who could do live stream work. Basically, I'm doing that every Friday still. And that's a huge amount of my income is just being able to use this skill that I really took for granted as a college student. So that amongst many other reasons why GVTV was really helpful for me professionally, but personally, it really was the core of my college experience. I got to meet everyone that I wanted to meet and spend all of the most valuable time there. And I really wouldn't take any of that back. Are there any final thoughts from this lovely, talented, beautiful group of people?
You mentioned a lot way back when we were doing this, fail faster. And I think when we adopted that as our phrase, get out there, make something, learn from it, make another thing, learn from it. That's when we were making our best stuff at GBTV. Everybody was submitting things and everybody was just getting to learn on top of everything that they were learning for classes, and can't understate just how valuable that is.
I think we're done, everybody. I think we did a pretty good job.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of Alumni Live, the podcast. Subscribe to our podcast to hear more from our alumni across the industry. Check out Alumni Live on Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube for more conversations and networking. Let us know what topics you want to hear our alumni talk about. The Grand Valley State University Film Video Alumni Network is here for you, and we're glad that you're here. Thank you for listening.